Ruth chapter 2, and I know that I'm taking kind of a different spin on this, but you know, when you look at this text, and at least as I've gone through it, looking at it, oftentimes I guess pastors, and maybe I got hung up on this too, was to focus on Ruth or Naomi. And those are obviously good focuses because they are in this narrative. But then you start thinking about what's underneath this and what is a constant. And you draw the conclusion that God is near. And many of you have already, well, several of you have told me that this series of Through Ruth has been very helpful to you. And so hopefully we'll get more of the same dose today. And actually this text moves through three different scenes. And if you were thinking of it as a movie or, basically a movie, you would think scene one, scene two, scene three, and you could do that with chapter one. Narratives are generally stories. That is, they're different than didactic passages, which in the New Testament, Paul would say they're clear commands. These are narratives, much like, well, Jesus used narratives too. He would tell stories, and those are narratives. And so what we have here is a narrative, and I think God is at the center of it, at least as I look at this. And so that's why I'm coming at a little different angle. I'm not the first scholar or theologian to actually come at it from this perspective, obviously, because there's a bunch of us out there preaching. But oftentimes the focus is on how faithful Naomi or how Ruth was faithful to Naomi. But I wanted to come at it from a little different angle, and I think we still wind up at the same spot. Also, there's a lot of little applications that can be made in this sermon today. But anyway, let's go ahead and get along with this. And scene one opens with the fact that God guards our steps. And this is verses 1 through 3. Now, in verse 1, and those of you that are new here, first-time visitors, the outline is on the back. And where the little blanks are, you just simply fill in the word steps. And so you can, what I call, some have called, play along with pastor. Anyway, we look at verse 1 here, the first scene. Now, Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of a clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. Now, four details are given here about Boaz. First of all, he was a relative of Naomi, which actually his brother, actually Naomi's husband, was the relative of. But when you were classified as a relative either by marriage or by blood, so this was by marriage, therefore this was a relative of hers. Also, you understand the word kinsman, because we will see that Boaz actually becomes the kinsman redeemer of Ruth. Secondly, he was a man of standing and a worthy man, if you want to put it that way. He was rich. There's no doubt he was rich because he had slaves and he owned field. But beyond that, when we get into next week and we look at Boaz's character, he was a very honorable man and could have actually lied but didn't, chose the right route. And so he was a very worthy man, a man of great standing, and somebody you can follow. And also probably, if you, not to allegorize the text, but he was actually a prototype of Christ when we talk about the Kinsman Redeemer. Not Christ, but a prototype. This is how Christ would act. And all these characteristics are wonderful. He was the clan of Elimelech, which is actually a tribe. and we remember in chapter 1 when we looked at Elimelech, he came from a clan of in Bethlehem. And anyway, he's from this tribe. Also, Boaz, his name means in the strength of Yahweh. In the strength of Yahweh. Now, to this point in the book of Ruth, it has looked bad for Naomi and Ruth. Really has. She lost her husband. She lost her two kids. Lost their security. Lost everything. So it's really looked bad to this point. But now we see a change, a shift is coming. And I told you, and I think one practical application that we can make here, and this is on a practical level, maybe not theological, but a practical level, is that when you have situations that are bad, and I found this to be true in my life, when you have situations that are bad in your life, let me just say this, they will not last forever. One pastor said it well, and it stuck in my head. Sometimes pastors say things and stick in my head, and it's excellent. He said this. He said, the Christian life is pretty much like this. You're either going into a trial, or you're in a trial, or you're coming out of a trial. Listen, your situation and your circumstance where you are today, maybe it's bad and maybe it's good. And if it's good, don't worry. Just right down the road, you've got a little valley to go through. It's the nature of the Christian life. But here, the situation now is changing. Yes, 10 years of darkness, 10 years of toughness, 10 years of hard knocks is now starting to give way to change. And I've seen this in my own personal life. When you go through tough areas of your life, just know this, they will not last forever. Situations change. So I guess the best thing to do, if I could give you some pastoral advice, would be this. Just wait the storm out. Just trust God. Wait the storm out. That's one thing I've been learning through Ruth. And on this Kinsman Redeemer, this is a great picture. Of course, they didn't have any actual pictures of Boaz, but in the Old Testament law, a near relative had the right to act on the behalf of a person in trouble or in danger. So as long as a redeemer or a kinsman could be found, that kinsman could help you out of the situation. And God knew this. God knew this. By the way, God knows everything that's going on in your life. He knows where you're at, and he's with you. And we see in this wonderful text the nearness of God. So let's move on. So, and we're talking here about the Kinsman Redeemer, but let's move on. God guards. I chose this word guards rather than guides because I think guards really hits a better word for it. And you say, well, Pastor, I don't even see this in the text. You will in just a minute. In verses 2 and 3, Ruth hatches a plan now. And Ruth, the Moabite, said to Naomi, let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him, in whose sight I shall find favor. And she said to her daughter, go. Now, gleaning obviously means picking up ears of grain that are left over. But notice this emphasis on I shall find favor. Ruth is very aware. I remember she made the transition. She said, your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. She made the transition. So she realizes that there is an element of her life that is under need of constant grace. She really has nothing to bring to the table. She is actually reliant on others and on God. So to find favor, Ruth devises this plan. So she set out, look at verse 3. So she set out, by the way, this is still scene 1. So she set out and she went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. She had been gleaning, obviously, not in Boaz's field. And this word happened, guara, at least in the Hebrew. And I love this photo here. This word takes three different tracks. I mean, if you Hebrew words were rooted in stems. And so these stems would then branch out into various different meanings. The word happened could be used in a hostile environment. Like when Joshua came up and he happened upon the Amalekites, or he happened upon the Amorites. It was a surprise. It was something that just came upon. The second way that it can be used, and I'm not even going to try to explain this because this group gets really wild, is that it can be used to build beams. But there is a third way in which this root can be used. I'm going to hold it there. This is kind of drama, but watch this. Now, you'll notice says that she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz. Happened. Wow, what luck. Just happened? The third way that Quara can be used is of divine providence. In other words, out of all of the fields in Bethlehem, out of all the possible areas that Ruth could have gone, she just happened to wind up in Boaz's field. No. God himself was guarding her steps. Do you see that? Look. Let me lay this one in too. You do not live your life by luck and random chance. You are constantly under the divine providence and direction of God. And I've seen this happen in my own life. That first church that chewed me up, and about a year and a half later, I happened, I used that word loosely before, and now I kind of get it a little more. I happened to be in Walmart getting my oil changed. And it just so happened that a man walked in and sat down right next to me with one seat between us, because guys don't do that sitting close stuff. So he sat there and he looked at me. And he said, "You here for an oil change?" If senior moment. Okay. Yeah, I'm here for an oil change. He said, "You live in the area?" And I said, "Yeah." And we started talking, and he said, "So what do you do for a living?" I said, "I'm a pastor." And he goes, "Oh, yeah, where'd you pastor?" And I told him. And he stuck out his hand, and he shook it. And he said, "I'm the pastor that followed you. And I lasted 11 months. I was there for 5 years. Now, did I need, going through a tough period in my life, did I need confirmation that I was not nuts? It just happened. It just happened that this pastor walked in and sat right here. I was sitting where Nate sat, sitting right there. He just happened to walk in there at 11:59 on that day and get his oil changed. I don't buy that. I bet you there's stories in this room where you could tell me things that just happened to you. No. Mm-mm. God's very clearly showing us that this is divine providence, that he is guarding our steps. And even when we go away, it's for a purpose. God will show us the errors of our way, bump us back on, and move us. Listen, rabbit foot Christianity needs to go away. This crossing our fingers and hoping things get better, that's not how we live our Christian life. We live our life, and matter of fact, we live our lives by the fact that no matter what we are going through in this life, they have been ordered by God, and nothing can touch us unless God allows us to be touched. Classic example. My wife says, "Boy, you really love getting into that Hebrew." Well, see, that's when I went to school, learned all the Hebrew. Now I'm getting all excited. I mean, I could go all over every place, but this word's huge. It looks like, to the reader, oh, it's just chance. But there's much more behind that little word than happened. It means it is a divine providential plan. Listen, if God can't keep you in the middle of his plan, then he ceases to be God. That's right. Ceases to be God. Let's move on. We go now that God guards our steps in all situations. Please don't think that when you're going through a bad time that God has gotten up and went to the refrigerator to get something and has just left you there. God's there with you. I want you to see the nearness of God. God shows up all over this text, actually. Now notice, we go back to Boaz. He's another key player here. And behold, that was an interesting word in and of itself, because it is a phrase or word combinations that's supposed to interject surprise, which you would think, oh, okay, she just happened to be in that field. tried to find an aerial view of Bethlehem and all the different fields that Jesus happened to go to. So, Boaz came from Bethlehem, just so happens to come from Bethlehem, and said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." Let's look at this little phrase. "The Lord be with you." And this is obviously a prepositional phrase in the Hebrew. All prepositions indicate relationships, and M, which is the little mark changes, in particular stresses a close relationship. So Boaz, the owner of the field, is coming upon these reapers, and he's saying, "May the Lord have a close relationship with you." Aren't you glad that you have a close relationship with Jesus Christ? And that the Holy Spirit dwells inside of you? And by the way, it's a good thing, I guess, for us to say, "May the Lord be with you." May you have continue to have that close relationship. There's a second word. Now the reapers reply back, "The Lord bless you." And that means commend. And for an example, speak words involving divine favor with the intent that the object will have favorable circumstances or state at a future time. So when he said, "May God be close to you, may you be close to God," they responded by, "May God bless your harvest." But this word divine, this word bless, is also rooted probably, at least from the Septuagint of the Old Testament, is at least rooted in the Greek word charis. What's the Greek word charis? Grace. Let me say this very clearly. Because of any situation that you find yourself in, you are constantly under the grace of God. You never outrun the grace of God. You never thwart the grace of God. You can never reject the grace of God. You are always in the realm or the sphere of the grace of God, and therefore are under His divine favor. Don't think that you can somehow do something to gain God's favor. That's not how it works. You gain God's favor the moment that you trusted in Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior at the foot of the cross. At that point, you are a child of God and you are in His favor. I've seen, oh man, this one woman in my first church, every Sunday would come forward wanting to receive Christ into her heart again because she wasn't good enough. And I said, "You're right, you're not good enough." Of course, that may have given her a complex, but I immediately followed that by saying, "You don't need to do this every Sunday. You're saved. God sees you as His child. You are under the grace of God." That should be enough to really change how we view things. And I know people, and I've met people that say, "Well, I'm just going to get better and better, and God's going to finally one day approve of me." Some people say that unbelievers, those who have not trusted in Christ, say, "I'll come to church when I get my life cleaned up. And then I'll come to church and get things right." That's not how it works, folks. You bring your dirty life to the foot of the cross, and Jesus Christ washes you. And you have nothing to bring. None of us in this room have absolutely nothing to bring to Him. And so even in this little message, we see God just pouring out of this text. And through forms of blessing. Okay, so now we go to the foreman's report. Now I want you to see that God guards our steps in all situations. And we looked at Boaz, and now we're going to look at the foreman. I found some interesting things out about Ruth that I didn't know about. And I think maybe it's because I have a better understanding of the Hebrew language now. But anyway, we get this foreman in here. Now, Boaz said to his young man, actually the Hebrew word there is the form word of servant. So you could say that he said to his servant young man who was in charge of the reapers, "Whose young woman is this?" Boaz comes in, he looks over the field, and he sees something unusual. Well, I think what he saw, he liked. And rather than, and it was customary back then, you didn't walk up to a woman and just directly ask her. That was a no-no. That was taboo. So he had to ask through his servant. What do you know about this lady? And I think, honestly, playing it out in the open, I think Boaz liked what he saw. I think he caught her eye and he was attracted to her. Now, this foreman's report takes form or shape in verse 6. First of all, he said she's a Moabite woman. Now, you notice the servant who was in charge answered and said, she is a young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. So here you have, she's a Moabite. Remember, she's, okay, she's not an Israelite, right? And she's a Moabite, and you know they were all messed up. But they were not on the forbidden list. It was legal. And by the way, the word young, when it's applied to women in the Hebrew language, when you're talking about young, when he said, who is this young woman, it can obviously refer to age, and that's part of it. But he was also, within that word, asking about her marital status. Is she old enough? He probably saw that she was. So we have a situation developing now. It's a Moabite woman. She's an alien. She's not really entitled to all the full rights of what Israel's people would be, but she's an alien. She's still okay, but actually doesn't seem like the best choice for Boaz. But he likes her. She made a bold request. She wasn't naive. She was brash. You say, well, Pastor, how do you say that? She just asked, well, look at this. She said, please let me glean and gather. Gleaning is not the issue in this text, and I'll show you why in just a second. And gather among the sheaves after the reapers. All right, we're going to stop there, and I'm going to show you something. Actual field in Bethlehem. They're actually gleaning here, and they're putting the sheaves all together. What Ruth was asking for a foreigner was foreign, and it was quite bold. What she was asking to do, which being a foreigner, a Moabite, it would be like, I'm going to press my luck. I'm going to press it and see how far I can go. But she wanted to work smart, and she wanted to work effectively. What she was saying is, let me glean, but also take from the sheaves, from the pile they've already created. That was bold. I am woman, hear me roar. She wasn't naive, timid. She was bold. And the first thing I thought about was that song in the 70s, I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar. I don't know about the part about too big to ignore. I don't know, but that was a bold statement. But then she waited a long time for an answer. Now this is, and I'm going to talk about persistence in just a minute. Now notice, this phrase is highly debated in the Bible. So she came and she has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest. That would seem to indicate that before she got permission, that she went ahead and gleaned. This is how I think it worked. As a matter of fact, if you look down in the English Bible, it even has a footnote down there where it says that the Hebrew phrase is uncertain. And so I think the better translation, and I wrote it down, and I'm not saying the Bible was wrong. I'm just saying I give you a little different translation. This is how I think the translation goes. She came and stood here waiting from early morning until now. She hasn't been working. She came to Boaz's field and stopped. Obviously, she had some permission from the other owner, but now this boy didn't want to make a decision, so Boaz comes up upon this field and sees her, and she's waiting for an answer whether she can continue to not. The next verses really, really confirm that. So anyway, you have a a woman who's waited a long time. And let me just say this. It's not the most brilliant people that get degrees in this country. It's those who are persistent. It's not those that get jobs because they're so wonderful. It's because they stand in line day after day to get a job, and persistence does pay off, by the way. And let me say this, you can get anything and attain anything you want to be being persistent. And I wish a lot in our society would get off this free stuff and start being persistent and going that route. Ruth was persistent. She waited. She wasn't going to leave until she got an answer. By golly, she did. Not only does God guard our steps in all situations, but he also cares for our needs. Notice verse 8 and 9, and I think it works in conjunction with being persistent. And there's times in our lives when we do need a handout and we need a help, and I understand that. And then there's times when we can be persistent, even in a bad situation, and stay the course and eventually succeed. If you would have told me, senior moment, if you would have told me back in 1987, yeah, let's do that. If you'd have told me back in 1987 that I would have graduated college, got a master's degree, and now working on a doctorate degree, I would have laughed at you. I'm not the most bright person in the world, but it's been persistence. And let me add this huge capstone to this. It was God, baby. So any of you out there thinking you can't do something with God, everything is possible for you. You do not put limits on yourself. You allow God to define the limits. But with God, all things are possible. You can accomplish anything you want to. If this sounds like an encouragement sermon, it should be. It really is. That's what I wrote down, encouragement. Let's work on it. So here, God cares for us. Now look at what happens in verses 8 and 9. Then Boaz said to Ruth, now listen, my daughter, this is pretty cool, watch this. He sees her, he obviously likes her, he's attracted to her, and notice what he says. He's a typical creep, male creep. I thought you ladies would like that, but. Now listen, my daughter, do not glean in any other field. Stay here, please. Don't leave. Did you catch that? Watch. But keep close to my young women. That means stay over here with the girls. He likes this girl. And when I say it's creepage, I believe, because he keeps using this word daughter and young, that there was a discrepancy in age. You know, you say, well, you see a pretty young girl walking with an old man, you figure he's rich. Maybe. But anyway, he sees this girl. He's obviously older because he keeps using the word young and daughter connected. So she's obviously young, but he's obviously infatuated with her. And then he goes on and he says this, let your eyes, notice verse 9, I know where to end the I know how to do that. Look at this. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping and go after them. In other words, stay with the ladies. My women servants, stay with them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? You catch that? He's trying to protect her purity. And by the way, young men, young ladies, there is absolutely nothing new under the sun. I'm going to tell you this, and I told my daughters this, Holly, freak out. The best way to find out the character of a man is when you're alone with him. If he's all hands on, you need to take hands off and go home. Character. Yeah, it's bold for a pastor to say, but I'll say it and then you can fire me afterwards. But this young man, he told him, keep your hands off this girl. He's trying to protect her purity. He's trying to protect her purity. When both of my girls were born, that was the first thing that I prayed, was to protect their purity. Yeah. Now notice, and when you are thirsty, go to the vessel and drink what the young men have drawn. So Boaz very clearly cares for this girl, and he's also meeting her needs. And let me say this. God uses people in our lives to meet our needs. I couldn't find an older Boaz and a younger Ruth, but and his character comes out. His character comes out later in this book. He could have lied and said, you have no other kinsman to redeem you. But he didn't do it. And I think the reason he didn't do it was because he was a man of God. Young women, make sure you marry a man of God. Young men, make sure that you marry a woman of God. And don't go by beauty. Anyway, here you have. Now, we just saw the story do a 180. They had nothing, and now Ruth has made her way into the field of what she doesn't know at this point will eventually be a kinsman redeemer. Somebody that will take care of her. Lastly, notice Ruth's response. And I could have put Ruth's response, but I'm going to make this applicable to our hearts. Then notice what happens right after he says, I'm going to take care of your food, your water. I'm going to protect your purity. I'm going to protect you as you do this. I want you to make sure you have enough to eat. I'm going to make sure you have water. Matter of fact, she's working for two. She's got to take some of this back to Naomi. Notice what happens. Then she fell on her face, bowing in signs of respect to the ground, and said to him, why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner? Do you notice what happens here? She is paying respect to a man who has helped her and that she has found favor in his eyes. And by the way, that's a form of honoring this person. When God provides for our needs, we need to worship him. We take a page out of Ruth's book here, her life. And as she had her needs provided for, she worshiped, in a way, honored Boaz, thanked him, because she realized that she has no business getting anything. She said it again, I am a foreigner, I'm an alien. And let me say this. Do you know we worship a great God? The stuff you and I get, we don't deserve. I've heard Dave Ramsey say this over and over again. How are you doing today? Doing better than I deserve. It's only by the grace of God that our lives are what they are. And we owe him everything. We owe him everything. I love this last slide. Beautiful picture. Psalm 92 and Psalm 136. It is good. It is a good thing to give thanks unto the Lord and to sing his praises into his name, O Most High. Thanks unto God, the God of heaven, for his mercy endureth forever. You know, here we see that we have seen that God guarded Ruth's steps in all situations. She just didn't happen to come to that field. It was directed. And then God met her needs. And he worked with her to meet those needs, but then provided somebody to meet it. Let's put that in our relationship to Christ. Please don't leave here today thinking that God is not near to you. Because I can tell you as your pastor, God is nearer than you can even imagine. And that God loves you more than the birds of the air and his creation. God loves you infinitely more than you can even fathom in your own heart. And all of those happen chance situations, they are ordered by God. And they are for a purpose. And in those moments when you realize that it's not just chance, that it's God, you are in the very presence of the one who redeemed you. And to know that this God that allows us to go through the storms in life, yet he still provides for all of our needs. That's a God that's very near and a God that deserves my worship and my praise.